Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Biddle, here with the trophy-laden voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
It is the afternoon, trophy-laden indeed, yes.
Yeah, a different time we're doing this. At an unusual hour, 5 p.m. on a Sunday. That is because you are jet-setting once again.
I'm off. Mm-hmm. And of course, we were desperate to get this pod out. We know that you guys look forward to that moment when it pops up on your phone, GKU podcast available. And to be honest, I don't think we could live with ourselves if we didn't put one out this week.
And we love recording it just as much as the listeners love listening to it.
We do. I'm sure you can picture us now. Of course, we are in the recording studios here. And, you know, I do feel a bit bad that we've got all these production staff in on a Sunday. But I mean, so willing to give their time to come and put this together. So a big thank you to you guys. They're all looking now. Give me a big smile. You know, really appreciate their time.
So we are as up to date as we can possibly be. We are, as I look at it, 32 minutes into the game between Spurs and West Ham. It's 2-0 Spurs.
Did you see the second goal?
I did.
Oh, you quickly rushed down.
I rushed down very quickly.
Okay. Anything of note?
Nothing hugely of note. A deflection.
Okay, excellent.
And the first one was an own goal. Excellent. So horror shows for Kurt Zouma, to be fair.
Excellent. So we're kind of hoping that there is nothing of note over the next 25. If there is, and you then suddenly notice later in the pod, we've like slipped in a random little bit of punditry, then that is why, essentially.
That is why. There's one more game after this, the Forest-Liverpool game, which I think might be something of a corker. So maybe some action to discuss. But hey, we'll see what happens. And if something does happen, I will just disturb you very quickly tomorrow on your beach.
Okay, agreed.
All right.
Works for me.
I did say trophy-laden, didn't I?
How did you not know this?
Not know what?
I know what trophy you're talking about.
Well, to be fair, it was part of a conversation we had earlier in the week, wasn't it? Because it was initially to do with the situation at QPR, which we'll get into in a minute, the goalkeeping situation. But you started telling me a story, and after a while, I stopped you in your tracks and said, I don't want to hear any more of this. I want to hear the rest for the first time on the podcast. So before we get to that specific bit, let's just speak of why you were talking about your journey into football and the numerous trophies and accolades you apparently won.
Well, you know, trophy laden is the phrase that's often used, which included a reserve league trophy very early on, which actually was quite an achievement at the time because we were Watford, we were up against the likes of Chelsea, Arsenal, etc. And I always remember playing Arsenal and they were so strong. They had like Francis Jeffers playing in the reserves and they used to win it year in, year out. But that year we did win that, so I did get a trophy for that. And then the only other trophies that I won, we did get promotion from League One. I was involved a bit that season. But the only real trophies I got were then the individual ones. So effectively, club man or whatever that is now, community ambassador, won that a load of times. I mean, that
isn't that
like
what they give to the player who can't get into the team?
Well, it was a little bit like that. But it was a case of, you know, I did my bit in the community. So, and I was always willing, I always lived close to the training ground, so none of the lads would do all that much, and I just seemed to be the easy choice to go and do, and I quite enjoyed it, so it was fine. So I won that every single year, but then one year I did have a particularly good year where I won Player of the Season, the Junior B's Player of the Season. There was another Player of the Season one in there, so it was three Player of the Season awards, and then Hottie of the Year.
So this is moving on to Brentford now, is it?
Brentford,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's when I peaked in many different areas.
So that last one.
Yeah.
Just say that again, please.
What, the Junior Bs?
No.
Oh, the last one.
Yes.
The Hottie of the Year. Why does that baffle you? And why is that so amusing to you?
So firstly, that was an award, Hottie of the Year.
First season at Brentford. And look, there's some stiff competition. Sam Saunders.
I bet there was. Yeah. I bet there was.
Anyway, Sam Saunders, I knew at the time, was really hoping that he'd be in the running. There was a couple of others that I know had put in a real effort that season. And I mean, let's just say it wasn't even close.
Voted for by whom? Exactly?
By the, from memory, it was the, like, obviously it wasn't the men, I don't think. It was mainly the female supporters of Brentford at the time.
Could well have been the men.
It could have been the men. But as far as I'm aware, it was I don't know exactly who, but it was, all I know, the only word they told me was unanimous.
So this was just the one time. Wasn't another Hottie of Year.
No, I kind of feel like the next year, my gut says they probably would have given it to me again, but you know what it's like. You then want to share it out amongst others. So I didn't win it after that. I think Sam did end up getting one a few years later. I think he knew it was more of a pity vote, you know?
Do you still, was there a trophy?
Yeah, it was like a nice shield.
Do you still have it?
Annoyingly, I do. Or I say annoyingly.
Do you mean
I do.
Annoyingly?
No, no, no. Annoyingly, I've lost it, but I have it. It must be somewhere. It'd be my parents, I'm sure. Okay. I'm not great, really, when it comes to... Not that there were loads of trophies. I've pretty much just listed them all, but I don't know where any of them are.
Okay, well, anyway. Thank you. Thank you for regaling us with that story. But this was all to do, like I said, with the situation at Queen's Park Rangers this week, which has been quite something. Four goalkeepers out of action. So Senny Dieng out, David Marshall out, Joe Walsh out, and one other, Jordan Archer, all out. So they were in a bit of a pickle this week. How did it play out?
Yeah, and I think first and foremost, you know, I was looking at the situation, and this is one where we go into goalkeeping dynamics, the way in which you structure a goalkeeping department. And I know we've had various chats, numerous chats on the show about a good way to structure the department, how to make the most of the emergency loan. This was a situation that fascinated me for several reasons. One being the fact they're doing as well as they are in the championship would always mean it's hard to do an emergency loan if they were eligible. Now, they actually weren't eligible in this case. First and foremost, this is just sheer bad luck. To have four goalkeepers injured, as much as we can sit here and talk about structuring a department in a certain way, first and foremost, look, you know, even if they're, well, they did effectively have four goalkeepers that were available to play, and all four, as far as I'm aware, are out for the season, or as good as out for the season, which is just desperately unlucky, and all for different things. You know, look at the various injuries that they've got. Of course, Marshall in the game against Forest was a hamstring injury. You've then got Jordan Archer with a shoulder, a dislocated shoulder from saving a penalty, winning penalty save. Joe Walsh, I think it was a broken hand in training. Then you've got Senny Dieng, I want to say his ankle in a game. So it's not like they've been overtraining. They've all been like impact injuries or injuries that have happened during games, so desperately unlucky. Then what happened was because they've got the goalkeepers on their books. One of the goalkeepers is Dylan Barnes, who has played over the five EFL games. So that meant they weren't eligible for an emergency loan. So then they've got the decision, do they play either Murphy Cooper, who's been sat on the bench and doing very well at QPR, good young goalkeeper they've got. Do they play Dylan Barnes, who's recently been out on loan? Or do they then bring someone in? And there was one name of note, I think it's fair to say, well, in fact, there's two names to note. They're still out there on a free transfer that are unattached, which you'd say were Lee Camp and Kieran Westwood, which to have a goalkeeper unattached in March is so unusual. But now it just shows the power. If you are a goalkeeper unattached in February, March, we've seen it with Ireland, who's now playing at Reading. We've now seen it with Kieran Westwood, who, of course, got the nod at QPR, is now playing at QPR. And it's, if nothing else, it's something to bear in mind, because if the rules don't change when it comes to emergency loan, because again, that was the other point I was going to make, is I think had QPR been allowed to do an emergency loan, who does a loan to them? Because if you're another championship club, are you really going to loan to QPR knowing that they're in the running for a playoff place? Certainly if you're competing with them, I think there's very little chance. So then you're going into League One, a third choice goalkeeper in League One, in order to come in. So it's, while the rules are as they are, for me, it is a really interesting one for your out of contract goalkeepers to look at as potentially landing, well, a giant gig.
Mad situation, isn't it? And that is, what, 9 months? Around 9-10 months out of action. Yeah. Well, not, I mean, out of training with a professional club for Kieran Westwood. So that's another example of, again, like you say, you've got to keep yourself ready.
Well, he's had options. Like, don't get me wrong, he's had plenty of options, and he's made the decision by the looks of things that it had to be the right one for him to return. And you can imagine there's been plenty of League One clubs. I know that for definite. I'm sure there's been one or two championship clubs, but this one, of course, the opportunity to go a promotion race with QPR, to be able to finish the season in this way, huge opportunity for him. And of course, it's got him excited and he is back involved. But now it justifies the fact that he hasn't signed for a club previously, because no doubt everyone's known that he's been available. So a lot have been trying to bring him in, maybe as a strong two. But the moment that something like this comes up, just can't turn it down. And it will be a really interesting time for him ahead.
Yeah, he did say that he was biding his time, didn't he? He also said that he was watching that game between Forest and QPR and said, I had a feeling I was going to get a phone call. I just had a feeling I was going to get that phone call. Did play today against Peterborough. Not a great result for QPR. They lost 3-1 at home, but showed signs that he's still sharp. Made a good save for the first goal that was then scored with a rebound. Went the right way for the penalty as well. Nearly got to that, but looked pretty sharp. Mm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Certainly nothing that you would point the finger at him for. And look, I think the key thing is, and this is where I suppose QPR, of course, did have a decision with Dylan Barnes there, with Murphy Cooper there. Again, what Kieran Westwood will bring you is that he's been out there, done it so many times. And actually, you know, we talk so much, and of course, this podcast, so much of this will be about individual moments in games, great saves, distribution, etc. But there is something to be said for the aura that someone like him will bring. Just to be that calm, to have, again, been there hundreds of times, knows the environment, knows the atmosphere, be able to stay cool in that. So even if he's not 100% sharp, which he might not be, he has been training, but of course, to be match fit can take a bit of time. Even if he's not 100%, the argument will always be that an 80% Kieran Westwood is going to be a very good championship goalkeeper still.
Good stuff. Okay, good start. We've got plenty to catch up on, all the action from all four tiers. Not loads of Premier League action this week, mostly FA Cup stuff, but plenty going on. More goalkeeper assists too. Shall we get on with the show?
We could, although, of course, we have had several new patrons this week who we're going to name and thank.
We've had a couple, yes, but I don't have them on my screen right now. We've been in a rush today, so I thought, do you know what? I'll stick a pin in that. We like to stick pins in things. And we'll do it next time out.
Right. Sorry. There's an expression in football, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. But no, it's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But a big thank you to you two nameless patrons who have come on board to help us out. Really appreciate that. And unfortunately, I haven't got a co-host who's got the organisation skills in order to actually name you. So, I mean, to be honest, if I'm listening now, I'm not really helping out on the back of this. This is embarrassing.
Shall we get on with the show?
Well, might as well.
Okay, let's fly through the action. Starting on Friday night, the game between Wolves and Leeds. Wolves 2, Leeds United 3. What a game this was. And we'll start with a red card. Raul Jimenez. A collision with Ian Melier. Red card or no red card for Jimenez?
I think it was purely for the fact that it was a second yellow.
Yeah, it was a second yellow, yeah.
So, look, it's harsh because it's a 50-50 challenge.
You think it was a red card?
I do.
Do you?
Okay, in the same way that two people going for a challenge, if one gets there first and the other one then comes in and catches the person late,
yeah,
is it a booking? It's only because of that. I felt it was harsh because, look, he's running, he's trying to get the ball. There's no intent there. Look, I mean, I know we had this conversation last week, didn't we? And I know I got a few people disagreed with me on Twitter, which was fine, in regards to Sanchez. And again, the whole argument of intent. But I just think with this, well, not exactly. No, not exactly, because I think
you're
with
totally
this,
can't, like, going against your initial point.
Absolutely not. No, I stand by my point. And I know, again, lots of people, because I think the first one was with Robert Sanchez. Again, it was the argument, was there intent? I said at the time, I thought it was a booking, but I didn't think it was a sending off.
Okay.
Whereas I think it's the same here. I wouldn't have given this a straight red, but yeah, it's a booking, of course. He's just a little bit later than Melly. Unfortunately, one of them was going to get booked here. When it's a 50-50 like that, I always feel whoever wins the race, you're going to get away with it, and the other person's going to get the booking.
So do you think that should be the case, or do you think that should be reviewed as a law moving forward?
Personally, I'd be happy for it to be reviewed, because I do think 50-50 challenges, if they are genuine 50-50s, you want both players to be committed to it. I mean, it's a horrible collision in the end, but it's nice in a way as well. They've both gone wholeheartedly to win the ball. So there was no malice from Raul Jimenez, in the same way that had he got there first and gone round Melier, Melier probably would have got a booking for his troubles. So no, I'd be happy for that to be reviewed and be rescinded. However, I'm saying this without having the referee's rule book in front of me right at this moment. I'm assuming it is one of them. If you are slightly late in that situation, and it being the type of challenge it was, that will result in a booking.
Okay, what about the scenario where a goalkeeper comes to punch and the attacker gets there first and the goalkeeper follows through?
Yeah, again, I suppose it's a similar situation. It is a similar situation. And again, we're going to talk, no doubt, about Dan Bentley had one, for instance, in the game, and a penalty was given. And it's, again, it's exactly the same. And it's really difficult because it's like when two players go up to head a ball and one gets the header, one doesn't, ends up headbutting the other one. It's, I don't know. I certainly think when they are 50-50s like that, because you don't want to take that element away from the game. It's something we love, the fact that people do go in wholeheartedly. And if you know that it's always going to result in a booking, which it ordinarily does, then in time, does that change? Does that mean that suddenly players aren't quite going in with the same force, possibly? And I guess that's the same. You said it's a great example with a keeper coming out, going for a punch, mistimes it, punches someone. It's the same thing. You know, as long as the intent is pure, then for me, ideally, you wouldn't see many yellows.
Aside from that, Christopher Klaassen came on because Meslier did indeed go off injured. Dealt with the cross, a couple of good saves, his debut for the club. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, I thought he really struggled with his kicking, which he looked noticeably uncomfortable, which I was surprised at. But again, that could just be nerves. It's a big environment to come into. And you could see that it rattled him a bit when it came to his distribution. But you mentioned did deal with three situations very well. Certainly the cross manufactured the punch, I'd say, because I don't think he got there quite at the height he would have wanted to, but managed to get a left hand to it. Very good. Good parry to his left. Just good area. Solid hands. Got it out into good area. Then it was an excellent save. Tip over the bar. Good reactions. Good technique. And in the end, a vital contribution for a big win.
Moving on to Villa Park, Aston Villa 0, Arsenal 1. And Bernd Leno in for his first Premier League start since August. Again, looked pretty comfortable. Classic case of he's not had a lot to do today, the goalkeeper. And when he was called into action right at the end by Philippe Coutinho with a free kick, very good save and lovely scenes at the end with all the players mobbing him and Aaron Ramsdale as well. Nice little embrace from the two.
Including Aaron Ramsdale, indeed. Yeah, no, really nice because, I mean, you look back now, it was those first three games of the season, lamb to the slaughter to an extent, where they had obviously Brentford in the initial game, but I think it was then, was it City? And then might have been Liverpool from memory, but I remember they lost the first three and yeah, it was tough for him, tough for the team. There was still a bit of transition going on. Of course, Aaron Ramsdale comes in. He's been very, very good this season, and that coincided, of course, with positive results as well. So it's tough for Bernd Leno because you're sat on the sidelines and you've got that cliche in football that you're only as good as your last game. And unfortunately for Bernd Leno, you know, his last games or last games of note, you could argue, were those three games. Now, for him, and he has had, on the whole, I would say, a very good time at Arsenal individually. I know that, well, certainly the fans that I know speak positively about him. So for him to come in like that, massive result, massive clean sheet, solid performance. And you could see at the end that the players, and this maybe is a good indication as to where Arsenal are at the moment, that there was a real togetherness. They knew how much that meant to him. And it was nice to see all the players. And it's nice to see that obviously Aaron Ramsdale and Leno have got that kind of relationship as well, which I think, look, goalkeepers, of course, everyone wants to play. Everyone wants to be the number one. But I do find that when you've got a one and two that have that kind of relationship, ordinarily that can help the number one have that much more of a positive season when you know you've got the support, the backing of the number two, as well as the challenge.
And you could see it at the beginning too. Now, I imagine for footballers, you become immune to cameras just being shoved in your face whilst you're on the pitch. It's always amazed me that how footballers are able to just maintain their focus at that point. But he looked into the camera right at the start of the game and gave it a little wink. I thought that was quite telling, really. It showed he was relaxed.
Yeah, he looked good. He looked, and actually I was going to make that point in terms of body language, because go back to the games early in the season. I watched the Brentford one live from memory. I was doing commentary on it, and I remember there was a long throw that came in and was a little bit hesitant, didn't really want to get involved. And again, seen Bernd Leno at his best, and there's a top keeper there, but you could just see that he wasn't maybe the goalkeeper on that day that you'd seen previously. I think even the second one from memory, there was one or two people that had question marks over it. It just wasn't the assured Bernd Leno that we've seen previously. Whereas here, this is what Leno is. And I think it makes such a difference for any goalkeeper when you're playing with that kind of energy. We spoke a lot about Aaron Ramsdale's persona and the persona he's chosen. And every goalkeeper seems to have their identity. But you can tell when a goalkeeper is, I suppose, at the peak of their powers, that they really emphasize that. You know, no doubt we're going to talk about Alisson shortly. You know, he is very calm. He is very assured. Kasper Schmeichel plays with real passion, energy. Again, very calm and assured. You know, you go through each keeper and you could use certain words to describe them. And certainly Bernd Leno, what we saw was a goalkeeper that did look calm, confident, relaxed, enjoying the game again, which was key, I think, in having a solid performance.
Could be set for a few weeks, possibly in the side. Aaron Ramsdale out with a hip injury. While we're on Ramsdale now, apparently he was struggling with that 50 minutes to go, sorry, in the game with Liverpool in midweek, which, who knows, maybe goes some way to explaining that first goal from Diogo Jota. While we're on it, that performance, that goal from Aaron Ramsdale, and also you mentioned it there, the save from Alisson when it was 0-0.
Yeah, we'll start on the save. And I know it was interesting listening to the punditry afterwards. I think Jamie Carragher made up some new goalkeeping terms that I'd never heard of in my life. The way that he was trying to, in fairness to him, bless him, he was trying to break down the goalkeeper's technique. And yeah, he's trying. But yeah, no, look, from Alisson's point of view, I thought it was excellent. I thought that decision-making, first and foremost, bad back pass, doesn't commit, decides to jockey. When the ball then comes back in, gets there quick, gets himself set quickly, and it's just the shape that he pulls. So he reads the whole situation so well again. I know we talk a lot about Alisson on one-on-ones. I would argue that's his super strength. You know, the more that we're seeing it, he's just so intelligent in those situations. But it is the moment of impact. You look at the position that he, or the shape that he pulls, it's excellent. Doesn't give the player all that much of the goal to aim at, and it even reacts ever so slightly as well to get a little nudge on it over the bar. I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant save. And in terms of Aaron Ramsdale, yeah, look, again, the cliches come out, never beaten on your near post and all that. I think Paul Merson said, look, it's not that, because at times, of course, we've clarified this, there will be situations where you are beaten on your near post. I just think with this one, look, of course, he'll be disappointed. I think that positionally he was okay. You could argue maybe ever so slightly closer to his near, but I actually quite like the fact that he's taken up a true position. He's not over covering the near. That being said, he still gets down to the ball, still gets there with plenty of time. And I mean, when they're watching it in the super, super, super slow-mo, then yes, of course, it doesn't look great. But effectively, we are talking an inch, not even that, a centimeter. He just doesn't quite execute what he's trying to do. You could argue that he's going backwards ever so slightly. Aaron Ramsdale does like to take up a slightly more advanced position, so sometimes that can mean that the angle of dive maybe is slightly further back. So look, in a perfect world, he's probably a yard deeper, half a yard deeper. The angle of dive is ever so slightly further forward. Of course, if he's getting a full hand to it, even if he did what he did and got a full hand to it, he makes the save. So ideally, you're getting a full hand to it. But look, there's small details. He's made this save so many times this season. But of course, every now and then, you don't quite execute it and it can end in a goal.
So just to confirm, he didn't collapse.
Yeah,
he didn't just crumple in a heap. Now, I know that term is occasionally used when speaking of goalkeeping. You've used it before, but you use it in a slightly different context. It felt like in this instance, and actually a few times this weekend, I've heard that the goalkeeper's collapsed. That just says to me, all I envisage is a goalkeeper just crumpling in a heap like he's been sniped from the crowd. Like
Woody from Toy Story.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly
that.
What Aaron Ramsdale did. Yeah. No, he didn't collapse at all. I mean, the annoying thing was listening to the pundits, again, this is where they'll say things just off the cuff. And of course, they haven't got, we've got the beauty here of being able to edit. And, you know, there are times when we aren't quite as fluid and we do stop and you do your editing and you make us sound reasonably professional. They haven't got the joy of that. So they will just say things. So so Paul Merson saying that he was lazy, I think that was the comment, or lazy goalkeeping, that made 50 headlines. You know, Merson slams lazy Ramsdale, blah, blah. And it wasn't lazy. That's not the right term. That wasn't what this was. He was marginally, arguably out of position, and he doesn't quite execute. It doesn't quite get a full hand to it. By the way, the ball's absolutely struck. It is struck well, as much as they're saying, oh, doesn't quite catch it. Yeah, of course, watch it in slow motion. Doesn't look like he quite catches it. But no, he struck it well. And in the end, he just doesn't quite execute. But we're talking small, small margins. But of course, the more you look at it, the slower the replays get, the more you build up the mistake. And then all of a sudden that leads into a conversation of truly great goalkeepers and what truly great goalkeepers do. And yeah, you know, they analyze the death out of it in the end. So I did feel a bit for Aaron Ramsdale. But look, in the grand scheme of things, other than that, he had one other moment and you had the classic Gary Neville groan, as he's gone to clear one and it gets blocked. And, you know, but other than that, I thought, look, he looked fine. It's just one of those moments. It's one of very few moments in what's been a fine season.
Okay, Leicester 2, Brentford 1, and two big stops from Kasper Schmeichel in this one, from Pontus Janssen and Brian Mbeumo. Interestingly, the one from Pontus Janssen, very similar to a save he made in the corresponding fixture from Ivan Toney, tip over the bar.
Yeah, very similar technique used, a brilliant reaction. The way he's moved his feet across the goal, sets in a slightly higher position, knowing, again, just intelligent goalkeeping, knowing there's a good chance the ball's going to be that little bit higher. Speed of reactions, very good. Technique to get fingertips to put it over the bar. Yeah, excellent goalkeeping.
While we're on Brentford as well, David Raya in the Spain squad. So you've got Unai Simon, of course, the number one, Robert Sanchez and David Raya. This has made headlines because no David De Gea in a season where he's arguably rediscovered his form. Luis Enrique, I was reading some of his comments. He said, it is part of the tracing we do with goalkeepers. He is a player who is doing very well. That's Raya. I really want to see it in the context of the selection. He has the necessary profile to play with us.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. As you say, I think it's interesting timing given that David De Gea is having his best season for some time. But it is, I'm sure we spoke about this before on the pod, in that I know his reputation in Spain maybe isn't what it is here, and he is seen slightly differently for whatever reason. But actually, the three keepers you've just named there that are in the squad, obviously don't know all that much about Unai Simon, don't see him as much, of course, but certainly Robert Sanchez is... he's had a couple of tough moments recently, it's fair to say, but is progressing very, very well. David Raya, the difference he makes to that Brentford team, again, progressing very, very well. So I think it's fair to say that Spain are blessed with some very good goalkeepers.
Into the FA Cup, Southampton 1, Manchester City 4. That has just finished. Zach Steffen choosing not to rush out, apparently, and give away a penalty. The own goal, by the way, gents, scored by Aymeric Laporte. That is Aymeric Laporte. If you want to mention him, Micah Richards, Alan Shearer or Gary Lineker, but no, call out Steffen for that own goal scored by Laporte. But a big save at a big moment as well from Steffen, from Shea Adams. Not the most complex save you'll ever see, but a very important save because it was 2-1 at the time and they went on to win 4-1.
Yeah, very important. No, certainly to touch on the save first, very good. He's read the situation, gets down to his left very quickly, makes a save. And as you say, you never know how important it will be until afterwards. And of course, it's taken on that much more importance given the result. The penalty, the interesting thing is this is very similar to the Alisson one we've just discussed. Ball played through. And of course, Alisson goes, does a very similar thing, shows him wide, comes back and makes a save. What does Zach Steffen do? Goes down, realises the angle of the ball means it would be very difficult for him to dive. And so many would try and dive on the ball. The player's always in control of the ball. They'll just nip round you and just buy a penalty. So he's done effectively what Alisson did. And of course, unfortunately for him, it ended up in a goal. Nothing to do with him. As you say, it was not a particularly good moment for Laporte. But that's barely mentioned. All of a sudden now, it's you're almost damned if you do, damned if you don't. So had he have dived in and given away the penalty, of course, everyone would be calling it reckless, been saying bad decision. So actually, I did think, and I watched it a few times, I did think he made the right decision not to commit, showed him wide, really should have been then a safe area. But as I say, unfortunately, didn't end up the way he would have wanted.
Couple more results. Middlesbrough 0, Chelsea 2. The second goal scored by Hakim Ziyech. Joe Lumley questioned, should he have been?
Not really. It's a great finish for me. I think that there's wobble on the ball. They're saying not much, but the problem is it's the moment it's struck. And I think as a keeper, you read it instantly. So if the ball looks like it's going to your left, which let's put ourselves in Joe Lumley's shoes, initially it looks like it's going to the left. Of course, it then goes in the other direction. Doesn't have to be much. I remember a couple that I had where you go off that initial ball flight and then the moment it deviates, you have to get back on yourself. And unfortunately, it's not a great deal of movement, but it's enough. It is struck well. It is going right in the corner. Joe Lumley moves ever so slightly to his left, goes full stretch back to his right. And he's only a fingertip away from getting it around the post. But I think it was just that tiny bit of movement that makes it difficult.
And Spawny goal of the week. I'm going to Selhurst Park for this one. The third goal for Crystal Palace scored by Wilfried Zaha. They beat Everton 4-0, but it was the Michael Olise fluff onto the post that caught out Jordan Pickford. Spawny.
Cue the theme tune. You haven't got it, have you?
Mate, I was out for a 40th last night. I've been grafting today to get this ready so you can go on holiday.
Anyway, yeah, Spawny goal of the week. I'll go with that. Just one of those moments where I don't really know what he's trying to do. It is like the scuff of doom. But the way the ball fly up, that loads of curl as well, manages to come right back in, hits the post, and then Zaha finishes it off. So it is what it is. Horrible for a keeper.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship. Orjan Nyland and Thomas Kaminski both producing man of the match performances in the game between Reading and Blackburn. For Nyland, it was match winning. For Kaminski, 5 stops, sadly in vain. 1 stop not in vain, however, by Wes Fotheringham, saw him and Sheffield United maintain an impressive run of home form. The Blades beating Barnsley, and 2 penalties to mention. Jack Bonham denying Millwall's Jed Wallace in a 2-0 win for Stoke, and Dan Bentley conceding the spot kick. You mentioned this earlier, and a subsequent conversion for a foul on West Brom's Carl Bartley. It was an eventual draw for Bristol City at home to West Brom. Let's start there.
Okay. It's an interesting one because you don't see a lot of these given as penalties. And I know we've mentioned some in the past. I'm right in saying the Hugo Lloris one wasn't given as a penalty from memory.
At the Euros on Danilo, Portugal. No, I believe it wasn't.
So it's one of them where, like we touched on it earlier, that of course if you're going in for a 50-50 and you're late, then it's often given as a foul. But I guess when it is this situation, and this is where it is unusual to see these given as a penalty. You know, goalkeeper comes out, his intentions again are correct. It's a good decision to come out, I think. Doesn't quite execute. Fair play to the lad. He gets there just ahead of him. And of course, Dan Bentley in the end catches the opposing player. So yeah, I guess by the letter of the law, it's a penalty. It is just one that is so rarely given. So you can understand why he would feel a little bit hard done by. And in the end, of course, Bristol City do go up the other end, take the lead, but West Brom do get the late equaliser. And in regards to the other penalty mentioned, really pleased for Jack Bonham. Of course, I've said this several times, but one of the lads that I do work with, to see how he's progressed at Stoke, going in there initially as a three, fighting his way within a season to be a number one. That's now 10 appearances for Stoke. Good clean sheet, really good penalty. So this is one as well where made the right decision to go to his right. The ball's come slightly inside and he manages to manufacture a save. Now, I don't think he could have done this more perfectly, to get the ball to kind of spin back the way he came from and go back round the post. It was like a really bizarre angle he managed to get the ball back to. But had it not been that, then no doubt they would have followed it up. So really, really top save. Big win, important win, of course, for Stoke as well. And you mentioned the men of the match. Certainly Kaminski, yeah, save after save after save. And they are having a tough time at the moment, Blackburn. And certainly if they are going to have a chance to playoffs, you feel that he's going to be instrumental. He certainly made a very good top-hand save. Arguably the save of the match I'd give to Nyland, though. As much as Kaminski, I thought, made several brilliant saves, as I mentioned, the one with the top hand to his left was very good. But Nyland, the save in the top corner, and again, we spoke about out of contract goalkeepers, him stepping in the way that he has to keep a clean sheet, massive win for Reading. And the save he made in the top corner, I thought was top. He took up a good position, very quick to his left, powerful, decided to go with a left hand, fingertips to it, and it was a crucial save.
I feel like he's been a bit of a renter keeper of late, Nyland.
Yeah. It's, again, I do wonder whether we'll see a shift in goalkeeping and decisions of goalkeepers going into the season. Of course, everyone wants to be set with a contract. You know, it's not a particularly nice feeling knowing that you haven't got long left on your contract, or knowing that you're out of contract and obviously not getting paid. But seeing some of the opportunities that have presented themselves this season, you do just wonder whether goalkeepers, rather than taking a gig that they consider to be a 6 out of 10, just say, do you know what? I'll hold fire. I'll wait a couple of months. I'll just keep myself fit. And who knows what comes up. One other save, actually, that I didn't mention there, but you said about, was the Wes Frodringham save, which was a brilliant save down low to his right. And, of course, massively important. Again, another huge victory for Sheffield United, really strengthening their playoff aspirations. But, yeah, excellent save down low to his right. Right on the line as well. Really athletic to get his right hand down there and manage to scoop the ball out. Big, big save.
There was a healthy number of fixtures in midweek as well. We're not going to cover all of that, but I think it's worth mentioning the saves from Jack Bonham again and Lee Nicholls at Cardiff and Millwall respectively. Both defeats for those goalkeepers, but worth a mention.
Yeah, absolutely. The save from Nicholls on the line, how he got his hands to it, I'll never know. Hits the bar, he's on the floor, gets up, manages to get to his right and shovels it out of the goal. Very, very good save. And Jack Bonham, both saves were quite similar actually, in that they were one-on-ones. You could argue similarities to the Alisson save that we spoke about, not in terms of having to shepherd the player wide, but in terms of the actual save itself, where he's come out of pace, got himself close enough, and managed to create a very effective shape.
Into League One, which I would say was the league of the weekend this weekend. Three save of the weekend contenders. Jamie Cumming, instinctive reactions at Cambridge for MK Dons. Another win for them. Anthony Patterson and Jordan Wright, point-saving stops apiece in the draw between Lincoln and Sunderland. Late saves from both.
Yeah, well, to mention the Jamie Cumming, what a brilliant bit of footage this was. Just the save from Jamie Cumming, then the clearance off the line. But yeah, really, really good reaction save. Very powerful in order to get fingertips onto the bar. Brilliant save. And again, for them to win, they're right in the hunt. And certainly since he's been there, he's carried on the good work. And if anything, they are now, you'd have to say, in with a great chance of automatic promotion, not just potentially the playoffs. And yeah, really wanted to mention Wright and Patterson, two young goalkeepers. I mean, credit first and foremost to Jordan Wright coming into this Lincoln team. They were eligible for an emergency loan. They decided to give him a go, and what a great decision. You know, I think he's been excellent in the games that he's played, and the save he makes to his left-hand side in this game. Top save, really powerful. He's a big lad, but he moves incredibly well, and the way in which he gets down to his left to get a firm hand, again, this beats a lot of goalkeepers. So credit to him, good clean sheet. And Patterson, top save. This is actually visually one of the best saves of the weekend. The way in which he gets himself up to his right and again manages to claw it out. Brilliant save.
Elsewhere in League One, Portsmouth's Gavin Batsunu, four saves and another man of the match performance to keep Wickham at bay. Toby Savin committing and unfortunately not getting in a bit of a battering for Accrington. That was a 4-0 loss to Plymouth. A red card dished out for him, but another good performance as well and a clean sheet for Plymouth's Michael Cooper. And sound the klaxon. Craig McGillivray with an assist for Connor Washington as Charlton took 3 points from Burton. I think that's his second of the campaign.
There you go. And it was a brilliant one. Mm. Really quick thinking, picks the ball up, sprints to the edge of the box. Great side volley. And it's a very good finish, in fairness. Toby Savin felt for him a little bit on this one. Didn't quite execute the through ball. And then it's that moment of panic. You know, didn't know what to do. The player's there. You can see the player's got a great chance of putting it into the empty goal. And it is that moment. What do you do? And he's just pulled him back just to stop him scoring. You know, look, so many of us in that situation would do exactly the same thing. I guess that is the moment in a perfect world. You have that coolness of mind in order just to allow him to take the shot. If he scores, he scores. It is what it is. You stay on the pitch. But it is difficult because in that moment, of course, you're doing everything you possibly can to stop them scoring. But certainly a moment that he will learn from. Great save from Michael Cooper, full stretch to his left. I know we spoke about him a lot on this podcast. Certainly has a lot of people looking at him and not surprised. Surprisingly, top young keeper who's performing very well in a very good team at the moment. And Gavin Batsunu, I wanted to go a bit deeper on his performance because, look, some great saves in this one, but there are a few other moments. And you know, every week you send me the various clips, and it was really interesting to see the way in which he attacks crosses. Really lovely technique, really smooth as he's coming out to catch crosses at the very, very highest point. Distribution, very, very good. Looks incredibly powerful as well, and certainly another goalkeeper you can understand why so many people are asking questions about him.
The reason that we brought them up as well is because some comments after the game, one from Stephen Schumacher, the Plymouth boss, and the other from Danny Cowley, the Portsmouth boss. Danny Cowley, I get he was trying to make a point, but I think the journos at the time took it quite literally, and then there were a few articles saying, well, no, Danny, that's not entirely accurate. He said he hasn't had to make any saves all season. You look at the stats. He hasn't had to make any saves all season. I think he has. That he's made over 100 saves, I think, this season for Portsmouth. He said he hasn't, but he did today, and he made some good ones. He's a top goalkeeper. He's the best I've ever worked with, said Danny Cowley. And Stephen Schumacher on Michael Cooper said good teams have good goalkeepers, and we've got a good goalkeeper. But he also reserved praise for Callum Burton, the number two. He said he pushes Michael every single day in training, so Michael's standards have to be at the levels that they are because Callum is on his case.
This is nice. I like this. Good management. Interesting. I did speak to their goalkeeper coach, must have been about a week or so ago, and unprompted, he said a very similar thing. Said he's gone in there, and again, it's so often the case for the top number twos. They're doing what they do in the shadows. But it was nice to hear that from the goalkeeper coach. It's nice to hear it from the manager. I think that's good man management, understanding that appreciation can go a long way. And again, go back to goalkeeping departments. It's great when you've got that. You've got your number two who's pushing the number one, but is a good lad who's doing it the right way. And then you've got your number one who is quite often your asset, who is someone that you're pushing that bit further. Can they help you get promoted? And certainly with Michael Cooper, they've got a great chance.
And finally, in League Two, James Belshaw, the keeper of the moment in League Two, another clean sheet and another top save in bagging that clean sheet. A huge win for Bristol Rovers at promotion rivals Northampton. Another penalty save, a top hand penalty save. We like to see them. Cam Dawson in Exeter's win at Oldham. A point blank save from Mark Howard. Carlisle beating Barrow and edging further away from the drop zone. And nice to mention Joe Murphy. another 40-year-old keeper. Hadn't played since September. He got recalled a few games back. They were without a win in five. They are now two wins and a draw since he came in, replacing Ross Doohan. It's also the second 40-year-old that we've referenced in recent weeks. Stuart Nelson at Sutton was the other.
Yeah, which, look, huge credit to them again. I've got my big 4-0 this year, and the thought of stepping out on a football pitch now is just no. Just no. So the fact they're still doing it and doing it to the level that they are, massive, massive credit to them. They must have to keep themselves right, live right, in order to still be performing as well as they are. As mentioned, really good penalty save, Cam Dawson, who's just going along nicely. Again, solid performance after solid performance. Credit to him, as we spoke of before, to take that loan, keep racking up the games. You can really see his love for football. Great penalty save, as you mentioned. Top hand, very, very good. James Belshaw again, brilliant top hand save. And a good reaction save, as you touched on, from Mark Howard. So, yeah, plenty of good goalkeeping in League One this weekend.
And more midweek mentions. Firstly, another klaxon. Jojo Wallacott. An assist yet again for Josh Davison, Swindon's win over Sutton. And I'd like to get your thoughts on a goal conceded at Crawley.
What is going on?
This was a defeat to Exeter. It was a Timothy Dieng, a looping header from just outside the box. And then a Frande Zanzala of Exeter.
Bulldozed him.
Yeah, just completely bulldozed him over.
And it wasn't a foul.
Goal given.
Wow.
Yeah, and they won 2-1.
Unbelievable. Mm. Yeah, I've watched this. I'll be honest, I missed this. So when you sent it through, my initial thought was, surely. Like, we don't need VAR for that. Like, that, come on. Yeah, unbelievable. Just bulldozed him. But yeah, look, on a positive, Jojo Wallacott, very good assist. We're seeing lots of assists, actually.
Just unbelievable. Really must be a record this season.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Look, distribution is improving and we're seeing more and more situations like that. But no, certainly for Glenn Morris, feel bad for him. I could imagine after the game, surely someone's knocking on the referee's door and asking the question. Clean Sheet Club. Right, we're in the final furlong of yet another glorious podcast. It's that time. We start in the Premier League and Burnt Leno clean again. Wes Fodringham, 8 in his last 10 at Bramall Lane. Mark Travers, not a single error. Nice. Ian Nyland, unbeaten as a Royal. Jack Bonham, no slipping at the back here. Andrew Fisher, hat-trick. Neil Etheridge, pen save and shutout, all in a week's work. Jamie Cumming, and roundabout, he goes again. Craig McGillivray, 2 win and cleans after 7 without. James Trafford, plucky number 7. Kieran O'Hara, returning to the club for the first time since Feb 2020. Jonathan Mitchell, treble. Aaron Chapman, 2 and 3. Bailey Peacock-Farrell, same. Jordan Wright, Michael Appleton knew everything when he sent you on. Anthony Patterson, 4 in 5. Michael Cooper, 1 better. Sound the siren. 5 in a row. Gavin Batsunu, MOM. David Stockdale, just 1 conceded in 5 after 12 conceded in the previous. Marco Morosi, 5 in 6. James Belshaw, even better, 9 in 12. Cam Dawson, the man's awesome.
Very, very good. Of course, there might be a couple more before... one more if Hugo Lloris maintains... Oh, he doesn't. It's 2-1. It's 2-1. There we go. Okay, so good. We're nice and accurate.
Yes.
Good stuff. There is a game tomorrow, isn't there? But perhaps we'll mention that next week. The table.
Go on.
Leading the pack still, Liam Roberts, but still on 17. Of course, Northampton, not in the best run of form at the moment. So he is still top, but not a clean sheet for a few games. 17 in 38. In second spot, it is that Brazilian pair still with 16 apiece. Alisson in 27, Edison in 28. And then in third, a newcomer. Mm. We've got Gavin Batsunu with 15 in 36, Lee Nichols 15 in 37, and David Stockdale 15 in 39. I think that is 3 on the bounce for Wickham. And I know we've spoken about Michael Cooper, but 5 in a row, we always have to chuck in the siren there. That is the first time that a Plymouth goalkeeper has kept 5 clean sheets in a row in 64 years.
Wow.
Name the goalkeeper who did it then. Jeff Barnsley.
Of course.
Just yeah, so you know.
I'm just about to say. Oh.
Richard, nothing but a pleasure. Like we said, we might be slipping in some action from the Spurs-West Ham game and the Forest-Liverpool FA Cup tie. But if not, this has been nothing but a pleasure.
It always is.
Thank you.
If only it was an award given for the best goalkeeping podcast that's housed in Watford, I think we'd have more awards.
We'd be up there.
We'd be up there.
There or thereabouts.
Well, we'd be in the running.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers away.